for many people, black holes can feel abstract and so far away they might as well be science fiction. But a recent discovery shows that black holes are a lot closer to Earth than previously known. Our next guest joins us to talk about that story and other big news from space. David Eicher is editor-in-chief of Astronomy Magazine. It's based in Waukesha. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Let's start with this black hole, David. Now, I say it's closer than we thought. It's still not exactly in our backyard, right?
That's right. It's about 1,100 light years away. A light year is the distance that light travels in a year. It's about 6 trillion miles. So that is a long hike. And by comparison, the closest star system to us is 4 light years away.
So by that standard, a long way away, by the standards of galaxies and universes, pretty close. This is significantly closer than any previously discovered black hole. Do I have that right?
That's right. It's the closest known black hole to us in the galaxy. And there's a little bit of a paradox here because we know that massive stars that are several times the mass of the sun ultimately form black holes when they die. There ought to be millions of black holes in our Milky Way galaxy. And we know of about 24. The problem is that they're very hard to detect and they have to be interacting with another object that lets us detect that they're there. That's exactly what has happened with this system that, as you say, is now the record holder for being the closest black hole to us.
Yeah, talk about how we researchers discovered this particular black hole. What signs were out there for us?
This is a black hole that's a collapsed star that's about 4 times the mass of our sun. And when it exhausts its fuel, it can go super dense and become this object that not even light can escape from. It's only detectable to us because, and only recently through research short time ago, because it's in a triple star system. And so we can see the effects that the black hole, that one of the two stars that's still, if you will, in its normal life is orbiting this black hole, and we can see the effects gravitationally of the black hole and what it does to this star.
Sounds like hypothetically there could be a whole mess of black holes out there that we would have no way of seeing because they're not near enough something big enough to interact with, so we can't detect them.
That's absolutely right. And we know that massive stars, ultimately, many of them become black holes. There are many millions, countless tens of millions of massives, hundreds of millions in our galaxy alone. So we know that there are many, many black holes out there that we don't know of. And there could be black holes that are much lighter in their mass than a massive star. These so-called micro black holes as well could be relatively close to us, and we wouldn't have any way of knowing it. Until they got so close, they would be a big problem.
Now, what do black holes tell us about this universe we live in?
They tell us a lot of things, and one of the main things is that they tell us that Albert Einstein was right, that his relativistic view of physics in the universe and how space-time behaves, that it's curved and that that relativity holds depending on where the observer is and what the observer is experiencing is true. They also tell us that that's the most massive and most extreme state of matter ends up in a black hole here, there, and everywhere in the universe. They tell us the universe is extremely large because there are many, many of them, and they're a long way away, even the closest ones, we think. And they tell us that maybe, just maybe, you could go close to a black hole, and you could possibly even go into what's called a supermassive black hole and maybe get to another place and time in the universe, although that's hypothetical.
And it sounds uncomfortable.
Well, the problem is with a stellar black hole, you fall into it and it would actually, the forces would pull you into a string of spaghetti, a human being who would be about 10 kilometers long. So that it kind of doesn't matter where you come out. If that happens to you, it kind of ruins your whole week.
Talking to David Eicher, editor-in-chief of Astronomy Magazine, looking at some of the latest stories in space news. Now, here's one. Astronomers have been observing radio bursts from deep space, and I like to imagine it's some sort of intergalactic call-in talk show. It's not that, though. They're these fast radio bursts, they're called. What are they?
They're very mysterious, and this is really on the cutting edge. We're in a golden age of astronomical discovery. There's more research going on now than there ever has been before. We know the answers to a lot of important questions that people have been wondering about for eons. This is one that we don't know the answer to, though. Fast radio bursts are extremely energetic, very distant bursts of fairly low energy radiation in the radio part of the spectrum. And it's not known what they are, but not only have they been observed for about a little more than a decade now, but we now know that there are a couple of them that repeat. They're not just sort of a one-off event, but they have some period to them. And this is really confusing astronomers how that could be. Could they be very, very dense spinning neutron stars that are made of just neutrons that, again, are sort of a dead star remnant that are very, very dense, that have very strong magnetic fields? Could they be mergers of some kind of super dense objects that are somehow spinning? Could they be supermassive black holes? Could they be something else that we don't know about at all? And this period, the fact that we're hearing, if you will, in radio, some of them with a regular period, this one that was discovered relatively recently, has a 157-day period, and it's about 3 billion light years away. That's a long way away in the universe. That means that maybe something is spinning and it shows itself to us every 157 days, that part that's spitting out this energy toward us.
Wow. Well, I want to take our last couple minutes to come a little closer to home, to Jupiter. NASA's Juno spacecraft has been orbiting Jupiter now for about 4 years. Can you talk about the kind of undertaking it was, first of all, to get this Juno probe to Jupiter?
It was a big deal, and it followed an earlier mission that was a little more extravagant called Galileo. But Juno has been looking sort of at the origin and the evolution, sort of the physical nature of Jupiter for the last several years. It's, of course, by far the largest planet, and it's very, very interesting because it's weird. I mean, you could put, you know, a 318 Earths would make up one Jupiter mass, and it's 88,000 miles across. It's huge. You could fit 1,300 Earths within it. And there are lots of discoveries, but some of the strangest, because it's in a sort of a polar orbit that's going way out, then coming very close to Jupiter, this spacecraft Juno, and it showed us that there are these groups of cyclones near Jupiter's poles, these huge cyclonic storms that we don't quite understand yet. It also shows that the clouds of Jupiter, the compounds in clouds like ice and ammonia and hydrogen, of course, and helium, are moving around in very strange ways depending on where you are relative to the equator. It's shown that the planet has a huge kind of amorphous, massive center rather than a compact core, or rather than just gases within it, and an extremely weird and unique magnetic field that's totally different in the north from the south, as if it was just bent and contorted, this sort of magnetic poles of the planet. And nobody knows why that is yet. But what's going on here may tell us also about the early history of Earth when we understand it all.
Yeah, this sounds like one of those cases where each answer generates, what, 5 or 10 more questions.
And that's both the joy and the problem with science, because planetary scientists and cosmologists here on both ends here are not going to run out of things to do anytime soon.
And with Jupiter, did I see this right? You take Jupiter's mass and then you stack up all the other planets in the solar system and there's still more of Jupiter?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's dwarfed, of course, by the sun in size and mass, but it's vastly larger than the aggregate of all the rest of the planets, indeed.
Well, before we wrap up, David, we've hit some exciting news from across the galaxy and here in the solar system. What is an emerging story that you are excited about that you're watching for the next results or analysis or whatever it might be?
Well, I think another thing here is this business about finding some of the missing mass in the universe. And that is, for a long time, mass and energy make up the whole of what we have in the universe. Einstein taught us that. For a long time, we didn't know what the normal matter was exactly made of and why we couldn't find it all. Baryons are what we're made of: planets, stars, galaxies, cats, dogs, trees, humans. And we know that it's only about 5% of the mass and energy in the universe. but we could only find about half that much in the surveying. And recent work is going on with this that has shown that a lot of this mass, a lot of these atoms, are spread out in a sort of a hot plasma between the galaxies. And work is going on that. So again, we're finding out many, many times. Once again, we found out that Albert Einstein is right again.
David, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks so much.
David Eicher is the editor-in-chief of Astronomy Magazine, which is based in Waukesha. He joined us today to catch us up on some of the latest news from space.